right, let's roll for initiative.
Roll for initiative.
All right. Do it. 2.
Josh?
5.
20, bitches.
Fuck. Suck it. Shit.
Show that. Hold it up.
All right. That's bullshit.
20. All right. Hey, and welcome to the Escort Mission. I'm your host, Mike, because I won the role. And we also have Chaz and Josh here. And what we're going to do is we're going to take you on an escort mission because you have low health, horrible aim, and terrible pathfinding. So let's get this started. Today, we're going to be talking about Mass Effect 3 all its glory.
Spoiler cast.
Spoilers. If you haven't played Mass Effect 3, you need to do something else right now, because unless you're into that.
Skip to our episode 2.
Right. So we're going to be talking about that, probably like the story, the ending, multiplayer, pretty much everything we can think of. So it's going to be long, so get situated.
Settle in.
But before that, Charles, what you been up to lately? What you been doing?
I've been up to some things. TV-wise, I watched Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones is good. No shock there.
Da-da-da-da.
Hell yeah. Ba-da-da-da. No, wait, that's the final countdown. That was the final countdown, not Game of Thrones. How does Game of Thrones go? That was it. That was good. Mad Men was good. I watched that. The one game that I wanted to talk about was a Molly Jam game. People don't know about
it. You Are the Road.
Peter, no, not You Are
the Road. Yes!
Oh, not You Are the Road.
Okay, I'll talk about
it. We can talk about it.
All right.
But for those who don't know about it, Molly Jam was a game jam, like a development jam, that was done around the tweets of Molly Dieu, which is a joke Twitter account sort of poking fun at Peter Molyneux and his kind of ridiculously off-the-wall game ideas. Any cough buttons. Next step. Next step as we get more expensive gear.
And by next step, you mean like never.
Never going to happen. So get used to hearing people cough. No, I played this game called Nebulous Hero, which is...
Didn't get a chance to play that, sorry.
Super fascinating and interesting. Totally a good example of what can happen when you have sort of constrained... constrained constraints around your creativity. The Molly Dieu tweet that inspired this game was, I want to make a game where the tutorial comes up after the end credits. And so they totally made a game that is exactly that, and it's completely fascinating, and there are actual multiple levels of tutorials that come up after you beat the game in multiple different ways, and it's really good. Everyone should go check it out. It's on the, I think the page is whatwouldmollydieu.com, so go check it out. Nebulous Hero. I like it.
Yeah, I saw your email on that, and I didn't get to that yet.
Yeah, I ignored that.
Because you guys are bastards.
All right. Anything else?
No, that's it. That's what I want to talk about.
All right, let's shoot it over to the J-Man.
You should go next.
No, host goes last.
He is host. He won the role.
I just commanded you to not do that. All right.
Me too.
Talk. All
right, you got it. Basically, I just have a lot of fucking Mass Effect to talk about, so I don't have much for this section. One thing, I just got into Draw Something.
Yes, like, so did I.
Wow, that shit like blew the rest up, of the world. Like, everyone.
It was nothing and then, like, 300 million IPO craziness or something.
Yeah, and at this point, there's so much drama with, like, the business execs that I wasn't even sure if I should install it and play it. I was like, wait, these guys seem like dicks. Maybe I should boycott it.
Should I go to Chick-fil-A? The chicken is so good, but the morals.
The morals. I have problems with morals, right?
The moral is tasty, though.
But then I was just like, yeah, whatever. Like, I'm not that much of a political activist or whatever. But so I installed it. Shit is fun. So today, Easter, I installed it on, like, all my family's phones and made them play against each other because I knew they would all dig it if they did. And then that's, like, all we did this afternoon. Just back and forth. So
nice.
So yeah, you may have noticed a couple from me, Mike, and responded, yeah, that pie?
Yeah.
That was my niece.
That pie. Wow. That was Milana?
I can't believe you got that.
Oh my god.
What was it?
It was the worst pie I've ever seen.
Was it like a circle? Was it even circular?
No. First thing she did was draw a rectangle. and it was a long, like, horizontal rectangle. I was like, where is she gonna go with this? How is this gonna turn into a pie? No offense, Milana, when you grow up and you listen to this.
Because of course she will listen to this random podcast.
This will go in the time capsule.
Yeah, you're awesome. I love you. I'm a horrible drawer. Like, honestly, some of her things looked exactly like mine, so...
I really like how you're blaming your niece for that horrible pie drawing that you did.
You know, great. Milan is your alternate screen name.
Seriously, that was a bad pie.
Anyway.
But you got it. You figured out what it was.
Well, he did. Well, it was three letters.
Once the aroma wafting came up and the letters were there.
That was the key. I basically said, you should draw some steam.
Oh, you were coaching her?
Yeah, I was coaching her because it got worse.
How old is this person? And I'm praying you say like 24.
No, she's six.
Six or something?
Okay. Yeah, right. She's like six.
She's 24 and severely retarded.
Hey, let's not get so personal on the first cast. Yeah, right? Let's keep it clean. Jesus. All right, fucker.
So that shit is fun, and then I played a lot of Mass Effect multiplayer, which we can talk about later. So, throwing it back to the host.
Sweet.
Host it up.
All right, so I got to check my iPhone, because that's pretty... Oh, right, game dev story. Mm-hmm. So this is not a new game in terms of like Mass Effect, like it just came out this month or something, but it is essentially like a simulation game, sort of like SimCity, except instead of building a town, you're building a game development company, and you've, you know, it's menu based, you know, essentially you hit menus and you hire people and you create games and you hope to sell them, and you know, they've got funny little names for all the companies, like Intendro and Sunny and you know, Snagen or Snega or something like that. I don't know, I forget what the Sega was. But I didn't play it when it first came out. I tried the demo and didn't really get into it, and yet lately I really got into it. For some reason, it's one of those games, I think, much like most simulation games, where the first 5 minutes of it are quite the learning curve, because they throw a lot of stuff at you and they're constantly introducing new ideas and new concepts, and it's kind of overwhelming. And unless you're just a huge stat fiend and you like, you know, curating multiple systems, you probably want to drop it for Angry Birds, because it's just, you know, you have to be in that mindset. But later I tried it and I gave it a shot and I got past the 5 minute mark, and then I totally got into it. And you know, the demo's great. You know, the demo lets you play for a good 20 minutes and you totally get the taste of it. So,
whoa, that's completely different than on Android.
Well, it also depends on what speed you do it on. If you do it on the slower speed, then it will naturally last longer than on the fast speed.
I'm looking at the games that I shipped in my game dev story game, and some of them are Doomhall 4, Blade 2. Duty of Call. I have a game called Duty of Call. Oh, I have a game called Loud Fight and a sequel called Silent Fight. So, yeah, I really enjoyed this game for that reason. Just kind of coming
cracking
up
your own shit up.
Coming up with names, yeah, for the stuff that... Now I finally have a forum to tell people what I came up
all
with.
All right, now I get it, why you like it, because you love coming up with new band names.
I think that's the thing with simulation games, is they have to let you personalize it so you care about it. Like, yeah, some of my awesome ones are like... Well, the interesting thing is that they make you pick a genre of game, like RPG shooter, but they mm-hmm. also make you pick sort of like a theme, like animal, robot, ninja. Mm-hmm. But some of them are really weird. Like I made a swimming tabletop game or something like that. You know, they let you, or they have a life genre. And I'm like, what the hell is a life game?
It's actually very Japanese in that respect, because none of that stuff is explicit. Like, you're supposed to sort of maybe infer that this genre going with this theme is going to cause me to have better sales, but there's no way to know it without trying, and it's a lot like a JRPG in that respect. Like, you just kind of, you figure it out through trial and error, and then you can kind of really get good combos.
Yeah, it does feel pretty Japanese. So some of my games are... Fuck Golf. That's my golf simulator. Harry the Sloth. Zany Zebra was probably like an animal simulation. Katakana Joe was my ninja RPG. Hell Yeah. Tronotron. Gazello and Octopuzzle. I was really going for animal-based names in the beginning.
I do want to play Tronotron.
Yes, that sounds good.
So anyway, so that game is really cool. You should totally try it. I think the full game is only like $3.99, and it's totally worth it. Also, one quick more note. Another iPhone game that I really like, which is based on a tabletop game, is called Ticket to Ride, which is essentially another kind of simulation game where you're essentially building train tracks from city to city, random card-based. You know, you try to build a hand and then use that hand to make tracks. It's apparently a very popular board game. Never played it, but I heard that it had a sweet iPhone and iPad version, and I've been playing the iPhone version. You can do all the normal solo multiplayer on the same phone.
Is the iOS version virtually identical to the board game as far as you're aware?
If by that you mean is it a good reimagining, then I think so, yes.
It's very different?
No, meaning like it's I don't know what the word is, that yes,
faithful
it is.
Interpretation.
It's faithful, yes. I think it is a faithful interpretation. I don't think it's totally different.
Okay.
It just basically adds, you know, internet play to a board game that doesn't have internet play. But that's also really fun. And, you know, it's got asynchronous multiplayer, much like all the Star with Friends games, so you can walk away and play as many games as you want. So, yeah, that's what I've been playing besides Mass Effect, which we're about to get to, because let's move on to the main topic.
It's time.
So, we are talking about Mass Effect 3. It came out, I believe, on March 7th. I played it for a few days, but then actually went on a vacation to Europe for 2 weeks, so I kind of missed the core gameplay that both Charles and Josh experienced.
The endgame zeitgeist.
Not even just the endgame zeitgeist, but just playing lots of multiplayer, or just even getting through the single player, and when I got back, I felt like I had to catch up. But I am now caught up.
You felt that way because you had to catch up.
Right. Yeah, and unfortunately, I think a lot of the Mass Effect games have been like that for me, where I feel like I'm playing catch-up because you guys got far ahead, and then I'm just like, I just need to beat it.
That was true with two, but one, I came out, and I bought it when it came out, and then I tried it, and I didn't really like it that much, and didn't play it for a year.
Yeah, didn't you, like, not even play it until I was telling you should fucking play this?
I didn't play it for a long time, yeah, like literally a year before. Okay.
So long ago, actually. I don't know if I knew you at the time.
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the first one did come out like, what, 5 or 6 years ago? It's been a while.
Yeah, I don't know.
So, but in general, just to give my thoughts on the game and what I thought about it, it was a great game. I mean, it's that almost feels reductionist because I'm really talking about three games, you know. At this point you can't really talk about Mass Effect without talking about the trilogy.
Yeah.
And the way that they feed into each other, especially because you can make a Mass Effect 1 character and take it into 2 and then take it into 3, or you could start a new character each time and that would be totally different. You know, you could change your appearance between games, or you could keep it. I mean, I actually changed my appearance during one slightly just because later inspection, didn't really like it. And I'm like, they're letting me change it. Sure, I'll change it a little bit. And the fact that you could do it as a male shepherd or a female shepherd, and that's like, it's a different experience just because the voiceover is pretty important to the enjoyment of the game. And who spoiler alert, who you lost at the end of Mass Effect 2, also has a lot of, that's a big turning point for a lot of people. So in general, yeah, it's an amazing game, and it's almost hard to really say how I feel about it because, you know, I would really have to think about how I felt playing all the games, and I almost wish that I could play them all at once to get the full, you know, feeling. But
for me, there's like two dramatically different concepts associated with the games, and one is the storyline that's been going on for like 6 years, and I'm super involved in the story, and not everybody that plays them is, but to me, you know, the ending is kind of like the ending to Lost, this 6 season arc or whatever it was. And technically it's a completely different story. Technically, the game, the first one, you know, had a lot of issues, and then it dramatically changed to number two. 2 to 3 was less of a dramatic jump, but I kind of really want to go back and experience the whole thing and play it differently. But I kind of don't, because the first one doesn't necessarily hold up as much technically. I think it would have more issues. All these changes or, you know, advancements in a lot of cases, wouldn't be in number one. And then, I wouldn't be as happy with my memory of playing it the first time 5 years ago.
I agree with that. That's kind of point. From a story standpoint. Like, I don't necessarily want to go back and play it because it's not what happened. Like if I went back and played it differently, right, I would be, I would feel like I was reading a book and like chapters were different. You know, it's that, that's such, there's so much that's innovative about this game, but one of the biggest things is the really kind of delivering on and paying off the player agency, right? Like the whole game is the choices you make. Like that's the game as far as I'm concerned. It's not the mechanics. The mechanics they improved and it made it more fun to play, but the game is the choices and you putting yourself into the game, which is kind of, you know, we'll talk about this later, but that's kind of part of what tripped him up at the end or didn't, depending on how you feel about it.
Yeah. Yeah. The, when I played the first game, I think I remember playing it more like a regular game. Mm-hmm. I was gaming the game.
Yeah.
I was like, every time I got to a weird decision, I would reload and try it differently. I would reload and try it differently. I was until I, you know, got everything the way I wanted to on my playthrough. But by the time I got to the third game, definitely, and it was evolution through the second, I think, I was more like living with my choices. Mm-hmm. I was like trying to choose and not go back because I, when you do that to yourself and you're like, I'm not going to reload and change anything. This is what's happening. You force this, you force the hand, you know, your choices become that much more important. They carry Absolutely. More weight.
Yeah.
And then you're more involved. You're more like there.
Yeah. Mass Effect 2 was the first time that I actually did that specifically, you know, at the end of the game, spoiler alert, you have the opportunity to lose a number of characters. And I lost a character who I had just gotten, which was Legion, the Geth. And I was super bummed about that, and I was like, oh no, that guy was sweet. I totally wanted to see what playing through all of Mass Effect 3 with him in the party was going to be like, and then I really wanted to reload a save and go do it, and I forced myself not to. And it's the first time I ever kind of cared about a game enough to potentially like actually hamper my, or like specifically choose to make my subsequent playthrough of a sequel less fun, potentially. Yeah,
theoretically yeah. worse, missing that.
Yeah. Because I cared about it enough.
My Legion experience was different, but very, very similar. I actually didn't know Legion was a character on my first playthrough. I was trying to avoid spoilers and mm-hmm. stuff. I didn't even look at character lists. I try to avoid that stuff, like the plague. I don't want to look at any articles for the games I really care about. And I beat the game. You know, when the Geth technology thing came up, I just gave it to Cerberus. I mm-hmm. gave it to the Elusive Man. Like, I got credit bonus, or I got some weapon or yeah. something. I was like, that was the other option besides, I forgot what your option was. Is like,
I don't recall what the exact choice was, but it was
like, yeah, no, like, I'm going to sell it for credits and a weapon. Yeah. Like, that's a concrete reward. So I didn't know Legion was an option until after I had beat it and I talked to you or I looked it up online. I was like, shit. And so I did have to go back and play that mission, but I stayed faithful to that game save. So in the third game, when you re-encounter Legion, he isn't named Legion.
Yeah.
He's like this Geth VI, I think was what they named him, Geth VI.
Oh, interesting.
And they didn't use the name Legion once. Now,
yeah, that's awesome.
Actually, there was like one, I think it was, I would call it a bug, when Javik calls him Legion one time, like offhandedly, but nobody else did the whole time. He never identified himself as that. So I think that was just a mistake.
They misrecorded to use the misline of dialogue or something yeah. like that.
So just to send the this back into a more of a discussion, less of a recounting. I definitely feel like I differed from both of you.
You're
guys
totally hosting the shit out of this right now.
Yeah, in terms of.
Back on track.
We're lucky you won that role.
In terms of you know, how into the story is, because it's, I will definitely agree that it is a deep story. It has a lot of turns. It's got lots of memorable characters. It's very easy to get emotionally attached and care about your playthrough, you know. Although in general, I'm not sure if this is just more recent, but I feel like the last few games where it's been like that, like for instance, Fallout 3, another game that has, you know, choices where you can uh-huh. affect how things happen by what you do, I'm definitely either through laziness or just through efficiency. I almost never think about restarting my game because of some decision. I may not always be happy with the decision I end up making. For example, even though I don't think in Mass Effect 3 you can save Morden, you know, he, no matter what you do, right, he will die. And that was an emotional blow. And I thought, oh man, I wish I would have done whatever I did differently. Maybe I could have saved him. But no matter how emotional I got about that, and it was emotional, I never really once for a second thought I would reload and try again. Mainly because I kind of just like this is my playthrough. What my decisions are, or what my decisions are, whether I end up liking them or not, I kind of trust that the game will make an enjoyable playthrough for me no matter what. Like, if there was a point in the game where I made a decision that completely hosed the fun of the game, I would think that was bad design, not a bad decision.
Well, that's a new development, right? And I think it's only recently that you've kind of been able to do that and trust developers enough to meter the saves. And actually, Fallout's a game where that can totally screw you, because you can completely get boned by having a save in the wrong place and not having a save, you know, far enough, or having a save that's your previous save be way too far back and having to redo a bunch of stuff because the save that you have is, you know, underneath 8 death claws, and you're like, well, shit, I'm screwed now.
Right.
So it is pretty recent where you can just sort of trust the game and trust the developers to take care of you and just let you sit and play, as opposed to managing a save.
I'm not even sure if it's a recency thing as much as just a developing that trust with very specific developers thing. Mm-hmm. Because even, you know, like Mass Effect 1, you could potentially do that, but you didn't know if you could do that. I didn't know if I trusted BioWare enough to do that. I didn't play the Star Wars KOTORs when they came out. So I didn't develop that trust for BioWare in terms of like committing to my choices until late in number 2. Or maybe in all of number 2. Yeah, I definitely would not trust Bethesda. Man, in Skyrim, I had like 500. No, I had 800 saves in Skyrim.
That okay. is too many saves. You did not need to save okay. that much.
All right, but I think I understand why you feel that way, and why it's more of an effect of the game itself, and not your trust level with the developer. I think Mass Effect is essentially a playable novel, in that they have a story they're trying to tell, and yeah, it may be a choose-your-own-adventure or a choose-your-own-reputation here and there, but, you know, much like we saw in the ending, which we're going to get to soon, you know, it was all kind of leading to the same thing, which, you know, is part of the outcry, sort of. You know, people, like, really got into their Shepard and their decisions, and they thought that was actually going to give them, like, one of thousands of possible endings or something crazy like that, when technically that's just not possible without making each one of those endings. Like Fallout, actually. Fallout does a totally different thing where it's more like, okay, how did you do with Faction A, Faction B, Faction C? Depending on what you did in that town, you get the ending that reflects that. And so you get like 17 chunks, one for each town, mm-hmm. and what you did.
Yep.
That's not really a story as much as it is like a, you know, report card. And I think, going back to the save issue, you know, Fallout is more of an open world game where, you know, it's a sandbox. They say, all right, here's the world, go to it, like, discover things. Whereas Mass Effect, I think, I would not call Mass Effect a sandbox or an open world game. And they're just two completely different kinds of philosophies where, one, yeah, they're not going to make you stuck with a save in Mass Effect because you're on rails, really. Whereas in Fallout, you're totally off the rails. And yes, you do have to manage your saves. And yes, it is annoying. But I think if you realize
but there are
what
games
they're doing, it's,
that
it could
used
be different.
To exist, right? Like the point-and-click adventure game, nothing's more on rails than an adventure game. And there are definitely games like the old King's Quest games that, like, if you didn't pick up whatever item is, you know, from the first screen or whatever, then you can't progress past a certain point and you can't get back there.
And that's bullshit. And they try not to do that anymore.
Definitely bad design.
But anybody can make the mistake. I mean, BioWare with their next game, or Mass Effect 3, they could have had a mistake like that. It's hard to put that trust in them. I mean, was it Witcher 1? Or no, it was Risen or something like that, that had a really
Dark Waters.
I don't remember.
Wasn't that an old 80s cartoon or something? Like Pirates of Dark Water?
That is an old 80s cartoon. But no, there's a game called Risen Dark Waters or Dark Tide or something like that.
Anyway.
It's a pirate game.
One of those RPGs fairly recently that had a major game-breaking bug early that just didn't let you proceed later. I forgot what it was. Leaving that in.
Nice.
So it's kind of a risk every time you have to put your trust in them.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I totally agree with you, Charles, that, you know, you do have to manage your saves in a Fallout or a Skyrim. But, yeah, I basically just see it as a result of the gameplay and not of the developer or them specifically not accounting for it or something. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
So what do we think about this game mechanically? Like, from...
Oh, shit, Mass someone just hosted out from under me.
Dude, I totally... I enjoyed day hosting.
Oh, sorry. Wait, what? The mechanics? What do you mean?
About the game, just from a purely mechanical, like, gameplay perspective. Like, the improvements from the first game... Obviously, it's gotten a lot better, right?
It's definitely one of those I haven't picked up the first one in a while sort of issues. But as far as my memory goes, I've liked them all the way through. I know people criticize the first one's
the UI.
Tank missions.
Oh, yeah.
That's right. The vehicle. There's a whole vehicle stuff.
Vehicle missions. I kind of miss those. I didn't hate them as much as some people. Yeah.
I don't know why everybody hated them. I drove up and down mountains and got myself stuck.
Oh, yeah. They weren't missions. Each planet you landed on was like a little open world.
They were the resource collecting minigame.
Yeah, but it was fun to drive around.
Yeah. And they were the best one. I'm just recalling that. They were the best one. I think they only went downhill. I think both the second and the third resource collecting was bullshit, and I thought they were stupid. Especially the third one with the Reapers, like, scanning, and, oh, God, the little squid machines are going to get me, and then it just stops your game and you reload, like, right before you did that. I'm like, what were they thinking? Did they think that's fun? That's not fun. That's tedious.
I actually thought that was a big improvement over the the scanning in Mass Effect 2, which I think BioWare have said, like, that was a mistake.
But that's like saying...
Yeah,
like,
but by improvement, you mean like removal of badness.
Yes.
Instead of kicking you in the nuts, they just punched you in the stomach. Uh-huh. Like, that's the improvement, I think. I don't know.
It's worse.
I don't think they ever were able to come up with a good idea
that. I was okay with them all the way through, the resource collecting things, but none of them were particularly fun except the first one. You're right. Driving that little vehicle around the planets.
And fighting. You had to fight
and
guys.
Then, yeah, occasionally fighting.
They just took the game.
It was a little tedious, though. I mean, that wasn't super awesome.
What
it
was tedious just... was the quantity. And there was, it felt like there was a virtual infinite amount.
Yeah.
And the lack of variety.
Right.
You know, they reused more assets in most series in their first games. You know, they're building the tech and they're developing the initial assets and stuff. And they, you know, they don't have as much of a budget and stuff.
Yeah, it's like Assassin's Creed 1 versus, you know... anything after that. Yeah. Assassin's Creed 1 is, it's like three missions all the way through.
Honestly, I thought that in this case, BioWare, you know, they respond to their feedback really well, but too well, in my opinion, in that case. Like, everybody complained about the vehicle missions of the first one, and I don't think they should have pulled them out entirely for the second and third, or replaced them with the Overloader DLC pack in the two. And they replaced them with the simpler resource collecting mechanic that they thought was better was actually worse. I think they just needed to improve the vehicle mechanic thing, add more variety, and remove the quantity. Make it just enough to be fun. It just needed tweaking, not complete overhaul.
Yeah, I think only the vehicle-based missions felt like had the as much emotional gravitas as scouring, you know, otherwise dead planets for resources can be, that had the most. As soon as you take away, like, what you're doing, which is going to a random planet and looking for stuff, they made it like, you know, a graph that you interact with. And then they made it a almost like retro proto-arcade game where you're escaping from squid reapers. And I'm just like, it was the weirdest thing. I was like...
I have always thought it's kind of a joke. Very strange. It's kind of cheesy. That they have you fly. You go to the star map on the bridge
on the
of your ship,
is weird.
And then you fly a little remote control version of your ship around. That seems bizarre and has always felt weird in both 2 and 3. Like, in any starship you could possibly imagine, there would be some interface there. You would manipulating the star map is cool. That's a super, super sweet mechanic. Cool. But then flying this dumb little robot ship around.
Because when you're manipulating the star map, you're like imagining that this is the interface on the deck.
Right.
And because it even looks like that. And then the camera like does a zoom in thing. Mm-hmm. And when you're doing that, you're like, oh, this is this extra layer of being removed. This is the interface.
This is the UI.
It's totally cool. And then when they make you move that ship instead of just a cursor, it feels like terrible ridiculous. Asteroids game or something. Yeah. Why is this here? Is definitely my
that is weird.
Immersion breaking.
Yeah.
But getting away from that mechanic, which all those mechanics are like secondary.
Yeah.
The primary mechanic. Are you asking like about the shooting and stuff?
Shooting, I think, yeah. RPG. Shooting has obviously gotten better. Does anybody know whether they're doing like RPG dice roll behind, or if they were doing that in one, but in two and three, it's fully a shooter engine?
Yeah, I have no idea. It doesn't feel like it. It doesn't feel like it does in Fallout.
If you mean
where it does really a lot.
Like chance of damage between this range. Yes, that's what it is.
Is that what it's doing?
Even through number three.
But what about to hit?
So if, yeah, like to hit. If
oh, well, there isn't.
Cursors, like, if you're aiming on the hitbox, do you hit? Because
I think that stuff's like a shooter, but the amount of damage done is
is a range.
So it's RPG some kind range. Of hybrid thing.
But yeah. Even, the thing is, even shooters do the damage range thing.
Yeah, know? So it's a shooter.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, so it's a shooter engine fundamentally.
Yeah.
Do we know if it was that in the first game as well?
Just we really should have researched before doing this podcast.
No, we'd have to replay.
Definitely no researching.
Okay.
Research bad.
I think the shooting was fine. I think, especially since we've all played a lot of multiplayer, which is just like, get rid of the story, just do the shooting. It's very visceral and feels fun, and whatever they are doing behind the scenes seems fine. I have to say, though, I mean, because everybody has said it, that the cover system is a little flawed. It's definitely fine and works, but the fact that it's too easy to get out of cover and almost sometimes too easy to get into accidental cover, which
that's the problem.
I do all the time. Whereas I remember playing Gears of War and that like never being an issue, like how, you know,
is there a button
game mechanics that go backwards in time? I don't understand. Like just steal their tech. Like they did it right. Just do it right. Don't make your own and then fail. Like, what do you gain out of that?
Yeah, it is a good shooter engine, but it's obviously flawed in a few ways.
Yeah.
And it is kind of surprising that the from number two to three, not enough change and not enough lessons were learned. It seems like for number three, there's some pretty obvious, like, this cover is kind of janky. Fix the cover system.
How does the cover work in Gears of War? Do you press a button to snap into cover?
Technically, I don't remember. It's been a while.
I think you do. I think you do snap into cover, but it's just I don't think it's as easy as pushing back on the analog to get out of it, which bothers me because I often accidentally push back, not thinking, and it takes me out of cover. No, I'm like, crap.
The problem is you don't come out of cover in Mass Effect easily enough.
Yeah, I never had the problem that getting out of cover.
I do have that problem sometimes.
Oh, no way. I have the opposite.
Well, okay.
I'm always stuck in cover and I'm always trying to get out of cover.
Okay, well, I think we can agree that there's a problem
in
getting in and out of cover. Like, it's a little janky.
It's not the best, but it is totally functional and multiplayer is super rad.
Another mechanic I wanted to talk about was just the general interaction with NPCs and like the general like vibe of being in the towns and stuff like that. I don't know if it's just
the
me.
Towns.
Well, the stations or the planets, whatever. Fuck you. Like, I feel like there was far fewer interactions like there were in Mass Effect 2 with people and shops and shopkeepers. Like, I remember talking to shopkeepers in 1 and 2, I think. And then, you know, you have the meme of, like, you know, I'm Commander Shepard and I approve this thing. And I feel
this
like...
This is my favorite store on the Citadel.
Yeah, like, I feel like those little RPG-ish fun details were almost maybe intentionally left out of this one and instead replaced with much more emotionalness because it is the denouement of the trilogy. But I missed those. I felt like the world was more static and stale because of that.
Both 1 and 2, I think, were more... they were closer to typical RPGs in format and story. And number 3,
I think, felt very unique because it's the end. It's the war. It's like, honestly, I thought number three was going to be a lot different before it came out. I thought it'd be more like two. And when I first started playing, when basically the first thing that happens is a giant Earth attack, you know, Reaper invasion, the war has started. I was like, holy shit. I thought the war was going to be the end of the game. I thought it was going to be the last third of the game. I didn't know it was going to be 100% of the game. So to me, the whole third game feels like the end of the story. And
it is.
I don't think like that can be discounted. I think that drove their whole decision in structure and all these other their choices. Like, I don't think they have you spend as much time wasting time talking to NPCs on you know merchants and doing this fetch quest and stuff. You don't spend as much time doing that. It's very minimized in order to prioritize the important stuff, which is all these core missions and dialogue sequences with these characters you care about that you've had experiences with for the last two games. And so almost every mission is like, you know, bumping into Miranda or bumping into
Jacob or Grunt yeah.
And Jacob, instead AKA of wasting time on all these,
that nobody likes,
AKA Jax.
Does nobody like Jacob?
I do not like Jacob at all. I think Jacob is totally weak.
I don't have feelings.
He's a
for
little
Jacob
weak,
Jacob,
but
I don't know.
How is he horrible?
He just has nothing interesting for me. Like, so I don't think I ever once included Jacob in a party in Mass Effect 2.
Yeah.
Unless where I was forced to do so.
He's a more bland character. He's kind of like James for me. He's just a bland soldier.
Same deal with James, yeah.
Yeah, they're both less memorable.
Okay, so question, because I kind of want to get to the ending, and you know, I think that's really where the juice of this is going to be. But Josh is already leading to it in that he feels like the third game was kind of the ending, and I think that's a key point about the ending. But before we get to that, what's your favorite character from the Mass Effect trilogy?
Liara.
Morden.
Other than my Shepard.
Morden.
Morden, totally.
Yeah.
Femship, definitely.
Okay, all right. Character that is not your character, I would say Morden.
Morden's great, but I like Liara.
Okay, and what?
I'm all about that blue bitch.
All right, enough said. All right, the ending then. I don't know how to follow.
Actually, I really like Jack, too. I think Jack is quite a well-realized and interesting character.
And I was pissed that she didn't become a player character in 3. Yeah. I really wanted her to be... Mm-hmm. I wanted Samara to be a player character, too, and I thought she was going to be, but she wasn't.
I did like how they brought in a lot more characters total by bringing them in for one mission and having the story component with them. Because there's no way they could have made them all playable.
Right.
And one of the criticisms, too, was the party was basically too big and people didn't...
get to spend enough time with the ones. Yeah.
I spent a lot of time with, like, 4 or 5 total.
Uh-huh. I thought it was a good technique. I think that was actually an improvement from 2 to 3, for sure.
I did, too.
Okay. So, Mass Effect 3, the ending, RGB. When I finished it, I finished the game at about 3 a.m. I started the last mission about 1:30, which if I had known that it really was the last mission and it was going to take as long as it was, I probably wouldn't have done it.
On a weeknight, right? Work night.
Right. But...
Dude, it's a weeknight.
Right.
Okay, that's a reference to the FP. If anybody has not seen FP, go find it. I think it's only available on...
like Laserdisc or something?
It's, you can only buy the movie from the store. Drafthousefilms.com. Go check it out. You'll crack your shit up at that line.
Okay.
Mike has yet to see this movie, so we'll do a podcast about that.
Okay, so RGB ending. Right, I finished it at 3 a.m. Despite that, though... it was still pretty emotionally moving, but I think its emotional impact was stunted, yes, by how tired I was, and I think I grew to like it more the more I thought about it. Much like the ending of Lost, as Josh brought up earlier, you know, it's this crazy, huge, long story, lots of turns, lots of characters, lots of shit happened. The ending is, you know, the ending is like one of those things that you know has to happen, but I don't think anybody ever really wants it to come, and you're never ready for it. Like, no matter what the ending is, it takes time to process. It's almost like a loved one dying. Like, you know everybody is going to die, but when someone dies...
Wait, everyone's going to die?
Oh, spoiler alert.
Fuck.
You know, it's a huge emotional impact, and you can't, like, say... You can't reason how you feel from the moment of impact. Like, it takes, you know, days, weeks, months, years, maybe, to really figure out how it felt. Now, of course, I'm not directly comparing Mass Effect 3's ending to the death of a loved one, but I did grow to like it, much like the death of a loved one. The more time, I took,
you came to like death of your loved ones. What's wrong with you?
All right. Keep up with me here, Josh. There is outcry. In case our listeners are not aware that there is outcry about the Mass Effect 3 ending. There was like a child's play.
I think we're
play.
So optimistic by referring to listeners.
Yes. Well, you know. all right, empty room that isn't me, Josh, and Charles. You know, I think there was even like a child's play, like donation fund.
There was, yes.
to change the ending, which is like
complaints
ludicrous.
To the Better Business Bureau and like FTC complaints and a bunch of really crazy stuff.
Yeah, sometimes there's a problem with the internet.
Okay, so can we all agree basically that
Mass Effect 3 is serious business?
Yeah, that this is basically another, you know, stupid, crazy, over-exaggerating internet thing.
I agree that stuff is ridiculous and over the top and totally crazy. But I don't agree that it's stupid for people to have felt dissatisfied with the ending. I think it's pretty dismissive, actually, for people who say, like, oh, the people who didn't like it, they're a bunch of whiners.
They
and
are,
you just
though.
Don't understand. No, they're totally not.
They're mostly whiners.
So
having an opinion is not bad, right?
Yeah, you can. I think there are totally legitimate reasons for people to feel dissatisfied with the ending.
I don't.
But Josh, you agree that the outcry and the outrage and the let's get $60,000 to change the ending and FTC, Better Business Bureau, is over the top.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that stuff is.
I think we can agree that the internet is, you know, an infinitely headed hydra that doesn't know what to do with itself most of the time, but
I would like to bring up
yeah,
you
no,
to
let's
bring
get
up,
into it. Let's do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, bring right. bring up the major criticism that
it
you think
begins.
Are valid, and I'll tell you how they're wrong.
Okay, so there's the kind of the criticisms that some people have made that I don't really think are valid are the kind of plot hole type stuff.
Yeah, don't focus on those.
That stuff is kind of silly. You know, I think they can. That stuff is easily either A, retconned, or B, just explained in later.
Yeah, so bring up
the
most important.
So that
ones.
Stuff is kind of silly. The stuff that I think makes the most sense, there's a couple kind of meta criticisms which I have or would make. Which
choose
are
one at a time.
Criticism that I would level at the developers. I will present these in
say
an
one
order.
Word followed by another word.
Yes,
and then
I will do so. The first one is, as we've talked about already, right? The they did such a good job in honoring player choice through the previous games and really paying off the player choice. Especially, you know, we three and the internet in general had such a fun time playing that game and saying, "Oh, I did this differently. I did this differently." You know, what was your ending like because of the choices you made? And I think that's something that people disliked and you know, it felt like, you know, the choices that I made throughout the game didn't matter because, you know, well, shit, I got online and found out that the ending is the same all the way through. And I think that they obviously had to have an ending. And coming up with an ending, they couldn't clearly do 10,000 different endings for everybody's, you know, a written ending for everybody's each individual possible set of choices that you can make, you know, whatever, however many it fans out to at the end of the third game. But I feel like they could have stuck in, like, if they had pre-rendered and fit in, like, 10 little cutscenes that would just clue us in even to what the people who we, you know, knew and loved throughout the game, what they were doing as part of the last battle, right? Just like 3 seconds of Jack, you know, doing some rad biotic thing, or 3 seconds of the Rachni Queen, you know, wrapped up on a Reaper and tearing parts of it off, or, you know, getting killed or whatever. Just slotting those in at the end of the game would have, I feel like, really headed off like 90% of this internet rage, because people would have felt like, okay, I've got to find out what happened at the end of this game with all the, you know, the kind of ancillary characters who I did meet and have contact with. And, you know, I think the argument you're probably going to make, Josh, is that the whole game is the end, and so you did get to have those. And I think, you know, that's true in terms of the overall arc of the story, but the game itself has to have a beginning, middle, and end. And not, I think not paying off that ending, especially when the whole, you know, the series has hung its hat on, like, really honoring those player choices and paying off the player agency. Argument number one.
So
discuss.
So, yeah, you made this extra leap of logic that I do think a lot of players also made, which is that, you know, early in these games, the player choice that I've been given has determined the outcome of these different events and led to these experiences that I can share with my friends. Like, oh, this happened differently because I chose this, and that was totally cool. And we could talk about a lot of those, because the fucking Morden thing was sweet. The Samara Morinth thing was sweet. I'm sure you have your own. You know, you took that logic, and probably a lot of players did, and kind of predicted and expected them to say that all these choices cumulatively from the whole series need to affect this dramatically different outcome of the whole story.
So I'm not saying that they should affect the ending or change the ending. I'm saying that with the same three endings that they are, if they literally just showed 3-second cutscenes as part of that ending,
final cutscene. Two arguments that you're making. Or implying. And one is, if they keep the endings they have and just add some cutscenes and stuff. And I agree that if they did that, if they kept the endings they had but add some extra little sequences where you got to see just a little bit more into what's happening with all these different characters, it would have, I agree, it probably would have reduced a lot of the internet rage. But I honestly don't think that is the main complaint of most of the internet rage. I think most of the...
Well, I'm not making internet rage complaints. I'm making what I think are the most valid.
But you also referenced the desire of players that have played this whole series and expected all their decisions that they made throughout the series to affect the end, to make a difference at the end.
Yeah.
Right? And that desire was met with this this set of possible endings that all end in, you know, with some similar aspects, which are you know, tragedy, you know, the Mass Effect relays getting basically blown up no matter what.
Shepard dying
is the key. No, that's not consistent.
Shepard, maybe whatever happens.
Okay, I didn't get that ending, but
in the very best ending, Shepard gasps.
Right, but I think most people probably didn't get the very best ending. I think they got the three where he dies.
Okay,
so I don't think most people even know that that's like really much of an option. I don't know. Anyway, move on.
So there is this tragedy that's consistent across all the endings that they were not able to affect differently. And when you listen to that top 10 reasons we weren't happy with Mass Effect YouTube, that's or whatever,
that's a core complaint to most of those.
Core complaint. He keeps going back to it. He's like, why not a happy ending? And then he's like, I'm joking or something. But
no, I think he legitimately makes that point.
He does legitimately.
I think he
and says, most of them do.
Wouldn't it be a more interesting choice to have a happy ending because lots of stuff has a sad ending now?
Yeah.
I think that's one of the points he makes.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, one of the main complaints of most of the people whining about the end. They weren't, no matter how Paragon they made all their decisions, or even theoretically how Renegade they made all their decisions, or how perfectly calculated they made every decision they were given, they couldn't have come up with a happier ending than destroying all the Mass Effect relays,
right?
Killing lots of people.
Kind of a bummer.
You know, this super tragedy. And I think that the story writers, creators of the game had the right and had the ability and created this story that does have this tragedy ending, but still has enough
significant variety and ending that, that is determined by player choice, that it's a phenomenal achievement. And I think that the majority of the complainers about the ending not satisfying their player choice is basically people that don't know how to deal with tragedies.
Yeah, you know, I think that that's true. And the point of the only thing I would say about a tragedy is that it's when you make players so invested, and when you sell your game based on how well you do that, like they hang their hat on that. When it's your Shepard, when it's you, right? As opposed to I'm playing Final Fantasy and I'm kind of playing it, but there's a plot, right? When it is you and you've made all these choices and you get to the end and it's a tragedy, people like tragedies and people like tragic novels and movies, but again, that's something, that's a story that's being delivered to you. When you're writing the story, when you feel like you're writing the story along with the developer by making all these choices, having all these choices available to you, and, you know, perceived or not, or real, you know, in Mass Effect 2, a lot of them are very real because they affect, you know, characters' deaths, right? Just at the most basic level. Some people you don't have available in 3, right? So they are real in that sense. No matter, some of them are only perceived, like Morden's death happens regardless of what you do, but it happens in different ways, but he's always dead. But when you have all that choice available and the players feel like they're writing the story along with the developers, nobody's writing a tragedy for themselves, right? Like, they like a tragedy and they can enjoy going to see a tragic movie or a tragic novel, but it's going to rile them up or make them pissed. Like, I think it's very legitimate for people to not want that to happen to them. Like, nobody's making their own tragedy with their life on purpose, right? Nobody's purposefully writing their life as a tragedy.
Right, but I think it's an issue of people not knowing what's good for them. Like,
but I think you have to say, like, that's... I don't think you have to say anything. I think that's the reason why people are mad. That's a reason, and I think a legitimate one, why people are mad about it. Because, like, yeah, it's fun to see a good tragedy, but not when it's you, not when it's your child or, you know, your
sister. I disagree. Or whatever. It was even more impactful. It was even more of a landmark achievement in game making and, you know, in storytelling, because players had this potential to be even more invested than maybe they get invested in game or sorry, movies or books. You know, other formats, it is you. And so when the tragedy happens to you, it's even more heartbreaking.
Well, so I guess what I'm saying is, and I agree with that, it was clearly a developer choice. And so the only idea that I'm trying to draw is that in a book or a movie, you can kind of do that with impunity. With a game where you've put this much player choice in there, you don't have that impunity, right? And they should have at least known, and maybe they did know, that it was going to be this much of a backlash. I don't think they did necessarily. I think the kind of statements they've released after the fact have shown that they didn't. But it was clearly their choice, their intention to make these the only 3 endings and to make have it be a tragic ending. But I think that people aren't going to respond necessarily well. You know, I think that's kind of the root of most of the dislike, right? Yeah. It wasn't the happy ending.
Yeah, and I agree that, you know, you bring up these points. It's kind of interesting. They really did this weird dichotomy where, the more I think about it, you know, they were giving you the illusion of choice all along, because they may have given you...
No, that's not true.
I think they were giving you... Well, okay, so I think the thing is that the... People with all these choices over 3 games, a long time, many years.
Yeah,
I totally agree with you that they, whether they were purposefully, which they probably were, or accidentally or unconsciously trying to make you feel like you were writing your own story, which would put you in a different mindset at the end when you are then essentially forced to sacrifice yourself, whereas everybody else is like, you know, well, I wouldn't have sacrificed myself in my story, or I wouldn't have blown up the mass relays. I would have done something different, but they didn't give me that option.
Yeah.
But I think that's a little entitled, because you could have said that at any juncture where they gave you a choice, like, well, they only gave me, you know, absolute good or absolute bad choice, or the informational neutral choice, but I wouldn't have done that. I would have done something completely mm-hmm. different, and I'm mad about that. But, you know, obviously the ending is going to be the thing where you're going to hear the vocal, you know, yeah. About that. Yeah. But I don't know. To me, it does feel like it's a bit of an elusive choice game where, yes, the choices matter and they do affect your play and you do have different outcomes than other people. So, yeah, it's not a complete illusion. But the trilogy as a you are making the story
has its own plot.
I think is an illusion that you have the choice over that. Like, they're telling a story, goddammit, no matter how many choices you make, they're going to tell this story and you're going to have to go down our roads.
Yep. Yep.
But, and I feel like what Josh is about to say is that even though that is the case, the choices you make really, really dramatically affect what the ending means, mm-hmm. not so much what the ending is,
yeah.
based on your choices the whole way through. And I think that's a higher concept that is harder for everybody to understand or even accept initially.
Yeah. No, your choices don't change what it means versus what happens. It's a confusion of a lot of players that that you're not given choice over story control. You're not given, like, these developer rights or this you know, writer credit. You're given the choices that the character has in the story, right? And there's dramatically there's a dramatic difference there that there can be confusion between. And when you expect all this choice to have this effect that you want, and you're like, well, I want to choose a happy ending. I want to choose for the relays to not get blown up, right? In real life, like, or from the character's point of view, you don't always have choices like that. You can't say, I choose to win the lottery, right?
If you're Oprah, you do.
You win the lottery. You win the lottery.
Oprah has the secret.
Everybody wins the lottery.
She just has to visualize things and they happen.
You have the choice of, I know, I literally know people that buy lottery tickets and love the secret. I can't, yeah. It's so funny. Anyway.
Lottery's dumb, don't play the lottery.
You have the choice that a person would have or that a character was at, which means you don't know what's going to happen after you make that choice. It might lead to some things happening or other things happening, and you don't know. You need to find out. And the choice you're given in a moment, you know, you have to make. You're not controlling the end. You're controlling the decision making. Mm-hmm. The action, right? And so, at the end, you're giving these three plausible choices. Just like earlier in the game and all these other situations, you're given typically two choices. But you know, you chose to tell Morden about the sabotage, but you could not prevent his death. Right. And I chose to fucking shoot Morden in the back. I can't believe I did that.
I can't believe you did that either.
You bet.
Your favorite character.
He wasn't my favorite. And they led to dramatically different story outcomes. It meant that I was deceiving the Krogans about the genophage. I didn't actually cure the genophage. And then later Rex found out and confronted me and I had to shoot him too.
Seriously?
Yes,
that's totally awesome. I didn't know that happened.
Right. And that has
it was approaching one of the last missions. Uh-huh. I was getting back on the Normandy. I pressed the button. The door opened. Rex comes out, and he goes, "God damn it, Shepard," or whatever. And he uh-huh. plays a recording of me having the discussion with the Slayer Council member about the sabotage. And he's like, "I have insider's information too," or whatever. And then he asks you about it. And you have one opportunity to either lie to him
uh-huh.
and say that's not what it sounds like, or you have the opportunity to tell him the truth, like harshly, or I forget, but I basically
shot him.
I think I lied to him. Said, that's not what you think it is. And then he gets angry and he pulls a gun on you, and then I shot him in the chest.
Yes, listeners, Josh shot Rex in the face.
But in effect, it kind of prevented him from spreading the information about the
failed genophage cure, so I still had a bunch of Krogans on my side in the war.
An a-hole.
Anyway, dramatically different things occurred that aren't exactly what you want. I didn't want Rex to find out, right? I wanted to pretend to cure the genophage and then to have his help, or I even wanted him as a party member, but you don't get to make that choice. You get what you're presented with, and in the end, the choices you're presented with are all plausible, and making another choice in that case, like to shoot yourself in the head, or to you know, jump off the edge, or to just like lay there and die instead of making one of those three choices, I think that doesn't make any sense. You're gonna make one of those three choices. You're there to use this crucible that you created.
I think there's a reasonable. I don't think this is right or what they should have done, but I think that there you could come up with a plausible reason for her not to do that, right? They reference the time capsule thing that Liara is building that's going to include all this information, and so they make references to the information that they're trying to leave behind in case everything goes tits up. We know it's a 50,000 year cycle. Even more so now that if you play the DLC, the From Ashes DLC with Javik, the Prothean, right, who references that it's happened before, it continues to happen, it goes on. Like, I think it's reasonable that you could at least make an argument for a storyline where Shepard gets to the end and, you know, says, look, none of these choices are acceptable. I don't want any of these outcomes. I'm just going to, you know, leave it in the hands of the next round of biotics
concretely,
to solve this better.
Concretely, what does Shepard do in this situation?
Nothing.
What? Lie down?
Yeah, just like stare out the window like Luke standing with the Emperor in that YouTube video, right? Watching the battle take place, impotent to do anything, but realizing that none of these choices are the right one to make, right? I think you could plausibly write that story. I'm not saying I could do it, but I think a writer could have come up with, a decent reason for that to be the case.
So whether or not...
I think that's sort of immaterial, right? Like, they didn't do it. They chose not to do that. And I'm fine with them not having it in there. But I think that you could at least plausibly come up with a way for that to be the one of the endings.
Whether or not, you know, that's possible to write, right, is it, I think, aside from the point, they could have come up with many other potential choices she could have made. She could have tried to kick that hologram boy in the face and see what happened, maybe.
And failed because it's
no,
a
but I think that
or screamed at him, you're lying to me.
Some random
tell me more
I think
about
that's a reasonable
what you know
thing they could
about
have,
the machines.
A Shepard could have done had they played the game all the way through. The games as they are, all
yeah,
the way
there
through.
Are more reasonable yeah. choices that they could have written that would make sense. But the three choices you are given, I think, are all plausible and are dramatically different.
Yeah.
And
we all agree.
And they lead to dramatically different outcomes. They lead to either you, like, killing Edie and all the Geth, and, you know, in my case, both of which I thought were these AI life forms that that I had, you know, encouraged or helped given sentience. And that's what I did because I was there to kill the Reapers. And as much as I loved Edie and such, I didn't think that it made sense for my Shepard to do anything but the option that definitely killed the Reapers. And the other ones lead to dramatically different outcomes, like controlling and retreating all the Reapers and Edie and all the Geth surviving and, or the weird hybrid race thing. Mm-hmm. They're dramatically different. But they do all end in this tragedy of the Mass Effect relays getting destroyed. But I think that's a good thing. I think that's a great story point because I think the key to the whole series, I mean, the title namesake is Mass Effect, and these Mass Effect relays that have existed throughout the series are so mysterious. Like, we assumed the Protheans built them previously or something, but then the Protheans said, no, they don't know shit about them. And we learned that, or it's implied, I think, that Godchild thing created the Mass Effect relays.
The
Godchild
says, but
the Godchild
like,
made the Reapers.
He made the Reapers.
Yeah,
yeah.
So even still,
yeah, we don't know. I don't think we know who explicitly who made the Mass Effect relays.
Have you guys read up on the indoctrination theory, where basically everything from the point of the where he's charging the beam and then it
who's
fades
he?
To white? well, sorry, the shepherd. I'm the only one who played a male shepherd, so I always say he. But so he's running towards the beam. She is running towards the beam, and it goes white, and then he's like, he falls over, and he gets up, and he's slumping, and he's shooting guys. Like, from that point on is apparently in his mind and not actually happening. And there's like a 20-minute YouTube video that I have to say is quite convincing. Like, they go over, like, every line of dialogue from there on out and explain how it's in his mind, and it's actually the last stages of Reaper indoctrination.
You know what else is convincing, Mike?
What's that?
9/11 Truthers videos.
Yeah, that's the kind of argument where... So, I agree that it probably is very convincing, but you can... It's kind of like reading the
Bible.
Don't
be a dick to the host.
It's like reading the Bible. You can you can find an argument in the Bible for any point of view that you have, and actually, for diametrically opposed points of view... You can always find justification. So it's one of those things where it's that may be plausible, that may actually be true, and we may all find out the shepherd was indoctrinated, but it's sort of like impossible to know at this point.
It's honestly equally plausible. It's fun to think about.
Yeah, though. It is very fun to think about. It's equally plausible that Shepherd wasn't indoctrinated.
Right.
But it is, you know, I think also an advantage, testament, that they created this ending that has some ambiguity.
Right.
That allows for this discussion and interpretation.
So this goes to my other kind of main issue, which is another meta thing that I have with the developers, which is that they could have, they simply didn't pay attention to the optics of doing the ending as they did, right? Like in politics, I said this to you, Josh, when we had our first conversation, it doesn't matter what Mitt Romney's chief of staff meant or was implying when he said, you know, after the primaries, this, you know, it's like an Etch-a-Sketch and everything gets shaken up and we can rewrite everything. It doesn't matter what he meant by that if at the next press conference, Rick Santorum can hold up an Etch-a-Sketch and say Mitt Romney doesn't care about the country. Like, the optics of it are bad. When you can put all seven possible cutscene endings on a YouTube video and they play out to the second and they, you know... At the end of one of them, Shepard gasps, and the colors are different. It just looks so bad. It leaves them open to all these kind of goofy conspiracy theories, you know, like, oh, well, EA, you know, forced them to do this because they wanted to sell sequels or sell more DLC. It feels like they cheaped out. It was just like a bad choice. And, you know, the counter argument to that is, you know, they economized where they needed to. And they used, you know, they used money intelligently, and like by not having to render three different cutscenes, you know, they were able to put money into other things like doing a sweet multiplayer. And that may be true, but BioWare has never, you know, you've made that argument, you know, people have made that argument, but BioWare has never made that argument. So if that were the case, and that's what they did, and that's why the endings are what they are, instead of having a couple little segments in there that reference the choices you made, or just three different cutscenes, exact same plot points, three different cutscenes from each of those, and then it just feels a little bit better. I think they could have predicted, and they should have known, that that was going to piss people off.
Yeah, so if you're saying it was... The endings they created were kind of like a bad PR move, or
Just having them look the same,
like
just
not
it just
good
feels like they cheated.
Political decision or whatever. Then I agree, because obviously this controversy occurred,
yeah,
and they didn't want it to occur. They
we're still in it, Josh. It is still happening.
No, it's done.
It's not over yet.
It's possible that they wanted it to occur in the sort of no PR is bad PR idea.
Let me finish my thought.
Yeah.
Yes, they made a bad PR move, but I don't think that means they made a bad decision in the endings they created. I think they made good endings. That was a good move. I don't think it was a bad move to create those endings. I just think it happened to have these bad PR repercussions.
So we agree on that, and I think all three of us agree that we all like the ending, right? Yeah. You love the ending. I love the ending.
Yeah, I like the ending.
We all really love the ending, yeah. And when we played through the ending, we felt the emotional impact and quite enjoyed it. I think all of us, it's just such a higher order thing to say, like, the ending means something different if you did it this other way. You know, you got to accept that sometimes there's tragedy. Like, most of the people playing this game are probably, like, 12 or 13, right? Like, I don't know, they...
This is not the average, you know? But the average has got to be a lot higher. I mean, yeah. The average gamer is now close to 30 or something.
Mm-hmm. Is it M-rated? Do we know? Research. No research. Nobody look anything up.
Yeah. I don't know. I would think it's maybe a teen. I don't think it's mature. I don't think
There's enough blood in Tragedy. Blood was coming out of Morden's mouth as he crawled across the
floor. Well, I don't know.
It was green.
It was green. I didn't shoot the best character in the back, so I wouldn't know that. Okay. So just, we could go on forever. I mean, we could keep talking about this, but I feel like we've made our points about the ending. Unless, Charles, you specifically had another point. No. And we agree that we think the ending is good. You know, the outcry, you know, it's pretty much the internet, and it's going to blow over. And for such a huge, impactful game games, played over three games, like, I think it was almost impossible. Much like with Lost, I think you brought up earlier that, you know, a lot of people hated the ending of Lost. Mm-hmm. That show was amazing. And as soon as the ending came, and for some reason all these people like decided it was horrible, they basically wrote off the whole show.
I really disliked the ending of Lost, and it kind of made me not like the show as much.
Okay.
I thought it was kind of weird. Yeah. I wasn't so now, happy. Okay. I liked the experience
more
than the
end. We have to discuss Lost on a different episode.
Okay, we'll discuss it. But you will agree that the ending affected a lot of people's feelings about the whole show. Like, all of a sudden, the amazingness of the show that you felt 5 minutes before it ended, like, dissipated or got, you know, corrupted. Whereas, you know, I think I didn't feel that way. And I actually liked the ending, and I liked the whole last season, even though I can see why some people were pissed off. But I think it just with Mass Effect 3, it comes down to, you know, it's a complex thing. And it's, there's so many different things that affect how you feel about it that I feel like no matter what they did in the ending, really was, you're going to feel let down because it's over. And yeah, and it was a tragedy, and it wasn't, it, you know, although I think it was a tragedy, but I mean, you know, it still ended. It actually ended, like, with the last scene with them touching down with the Normandy and on this random jungle planet. That was hopeful.
It was also super hopeful.
Yeah, it was super crazy hopeful.
This combination ending that had the best of everything.
Right. So a really bad thing happened. You know, Jesus Shepherd did his sacrifice thing.
It depends.
In most endings. Okay, not in all endings. Or at least he purported to do a sacrificial thing, whether he actually died or not. And, you know, some of your peeps got away and they went to a planet and supposedly, you know,
to
life
repopulate
is,
this.
Yeah, life is going to begin again.
Universe.
You know, like Joker is, you know, only in the, let's see, in the green ending, you know, he's with Edie, and he's half...
They're the Adam and Eve.
Yeah, so the Adam and Eve, they're both, you know, they share each other's stuff, and...
He's glowing.
In the bad ending, or the renegade ending, where you kill Edie and you kill the Geth, they, you know, he sits down and Edie's not there, and he's sad because he doesn't have Edie anymore, so obviously they're not the Adam and Eve anymore. And then
he's got other females next to him, typically.
So he gets with whoever is still alive that's female, essentially?
I've seen clips. It varies. I think he often comes out with Liara in that one.
And
I think he's even come out with Miranda, maybe.
And I think that's a good point, that a lot of people probably romanced Liara, maybe throughout the entire trilogy. Yep. And then in the end, she gets with Joker.
Yeah, well, they're not holding hands and fucking kissing. I don't think it's necessarily guaranteed... Or even implied that they're going to get it on if she was your love interest.
Yeah, I don't think
if she was your love interest and they both get out of the ship, they're just getting out of the ship. They're friends. There's a lot more people that are about to get off the ship.
There is actually a cutscene where they're getting out of the ship fucking.
And they've got little, like, Joker Jr. It's really weird. Yeah.
I don't know what the Asari equivalent of doggy style is, but it's that.
So, you know, they've got, you know, it's got tragedy, it's got, you know, mass destruction, it's got, you know, hope. Like, it's got a little bit of everything, you know, but not everybody's gonna be happy with it. And, you know, I think Charles has some, I mean, he has legitimate claims that would affect popular support of the ending if changes were made, but I'm not sure that's important or that's the right thing to do. I don't think that BioWare should have done massive fan service. I think BioWare should do what BioWare meant to do probably from day one if they actually charted it all out and made their novel.
Yeah,
and
well,
it ended the way they were going to end. No matter what you did, he's going to die. The Master Relays are going to blow up because that's the story they're telling.
So some people feel that the ending should be different. I don't feel that way.
Okay.
I just feel that there were a couple things they could have done. And I think if you would ask any BioWare developer, hey, if there were a couple things you could, and maybe any developer of any game would say this, right? So it's sort of immaterial, but if there were these couple things you could have done that would have compromised your artistic vision, not at all, but made the game a little bit better. Would you do it? I think they would say yes. Right.
Well, and our whole discussion.
But that's subjective on what makes it better.
Made the play experience of your players more satisfactory and had less people, you know, in outcry. You know,
well, right, but you're also assuming that if they put a scene of Jack kicking ass or the Rachni taking down something, like, that's going to make everybody happy. And
I'm not saying it's going to make everybody happy, but I think it would have made, I think that, personally, I think that would have made the ending better if there were a couple scenes like that. I would have enjoyed it more.
So our whole discussion is somewhat immaterial because they did announce that they're going to release a DLC.
Which is very for free in the summer.
That basically, from the description, sounds exactly like what you want.
It does.
Which is, it sounds like it's going to be some like cutscenes.
Yeah. Well, I'm interested because I think you, Josh, made a good point.
Prologue stuff.
Previously.
Or epilogue
that,
stuff.
Or off the air. That the DLC they release may be simply exactly what they were intending to release before.
Yeah.
I think that's actually pretty likely that it's not going to be different at all from what they were. Would have released had none of this controversy happened.
Yeah, they're like, we're really responsive to all our fan feedback. Coming this summer, the DLC we were already making.
Exactly. I think that's actually fairly plausible. So we'll see. But I am interested to play that.
I'm curious to see that as well, yes. Because I was thinking like, well, I'm fine with the ending, but hey, if you want to give me more ending for free, okay. So, all right.
And more multiplayer.
Yeah, or more anything. Yeah, the multiplayer pack. Oh my god, like 2 new maps and like 6 new characters. Yeah.
Dude, Krogan Vanguard.
What's
Krogan Vanguard?
That should have been the Vanguard all along. Come on, the big rhino
Krogan
rush.
Anything, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we didn't even get to multiplayer, so we should probably leave it out.
Because, I mean, I'm not really sure what there is to say critically about it. I mean, I think we all like it, and it's pretty good. Well, the thing is,
a lot of the internet doesn't like it. Like, there's tons of people and reviews.
Are these the Call of Duty fanatics that are saying this or something?
No, Mass Effect fans, in general, were resistant.
So just don't play
it. And continue to be resistant. Like they didn't want the studio to quote,
spend
waste time and effort on the multiplayer because they thought it was going to be taking away from their single player experience. And
didn't in any appreciable enough sense. And it's really awesome.
Well, even post game, it can be argued that it did because anything that you find lacking in 3, you could say was because they didn't spend enough time on it, theoretically. Right. And a lot of reviewers kind of discount it as just this add-on thing. Fluff. Like, oh yeah, they put this there. But I think it's surprisingly deep and super engaging, and fills this niche that we could talk about later on another podcast of this 4-player co-op like mission scenario thing that I think more games need to fill. Like the dungeoning raiding experience, but light, like that doesn't require
without all the MMO trappings,
right? And you know, Left 4 Dead and a couple other games do it kind of like that, but they're not class based as much. The class based ones are competitive, not cooperative. Often
we could say something like Dungeon Defenders. There's a co-op class based multiplayer game.
Yeah, which is pretty dope.
And why we all played it a lot. That Mass Effect is. The multiplayer is actually really well integrated into the single player.
More so than
anything else I've ever played.
Right? I'm not sure I would say really well, but it does integrate. It's better than which is more than zero.
It's kind of like practice. It's kind of like practice for the single player because you're using all the same weapons, you're using the classes and their power, so you're kind of like practicing. It's like a battleground practice, and it does affect the story.
Theoretically, in a very specific,
I would say somewhat minor way that you could, you know, spoil for yourself online for 5 seconds, you know, with him living, with your shepherd living, which is incredibly ambiguous. You know, he takes a gasp. What does that mean? It could mean anything.
Alive. She.
Well, the shepherd could be alive. All right. So, all right. I think we've covered a lot of ground on Mass Effect. It was a brilliant game. I think, I agree.
Gaming's first epic.
Yeah, the fact that it's over 3, it's sort of like the gaming's Star Wars. I would go that far. I said it. It's gaming Star Wars.
It's better than Star Wars.
Okay. I'm not making a quality judgment. I'm making a similarity judgment.
It's going to get me some hate, but but the universe, like in some ways, like, as much of a Star Trek fan I am, and I like Star Wars, I like the universe of Mass Effect better than almost any other. Yeah, but better than any other sci-fi universe. All the different races and, man.
Yeah, I think it's definitely up there. I think we'd all agree that it is one of the preeminent, most interesting, totally worthwhile.
And, you know, you've got the Codex that you can just sit and read for hours and listen.
I cannot sit and read the Codex for hours. And I don't know. I think people are crazy who sit and read
the Codex. Well, no, you don't have to, but I'm saying it's there if you want to know more. And they've got, for most of it, they've got the announcer guy who also does, you know, the Crackdown narration, doing the narration for that. And I love his voice. Okay, so.
You're crazy. The Codex rules.
You sit there and read the Codex.
Yeah, it's awesome.
You just, like, read it.
Yeah, I want it on my phone so that I don't have to log into the game. That
exists, does it not? Oh, no, you have an Android.
Yeah, it's, why did they not release it? Snap. Fucking Android. Everyone Sick else.
Burn. Android burn.
Suck it. Everybody else is releasing stuff, like, if not day one, then day two or five after the iPhone version, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, for some reason that's not
cool. Right. Mass Effect.
All right, Mass Effect, good. All right, so we now, we want to move on to one of our features that we hope becomes
a regular.
And we're going to start it off with Charles. It's called a. He's going to do a Not My Thing. Go take it away, Charles.
All right, demos. Demos are not my thing. Game demos, what's the deal? I do not play them. I don't really enjoy or get the point of playing demos. The Xbox has a million of them. I actually often will go through and say, that game looks interesting, and download it, and then just delete it off my hard drive when I'm making space for save games, like 4 months later, having never played it. So what's the deal? Tell me why I should play demos.
Okay, I have a question first, though. Yeah. Is this more of a recent occurrence, or have you always been this way your entire life?
Pretty much always been this way.
So, you know, like those old computer magazines that came with like discs, like 50 new demos to play before the internet was big. Like, you didn't care about like experiencing like what's coming out. So you only buy games when they come out. Maybe you'll read some reviews, but you will not try them before you buy them.
I just don't. Yeah, I don't know. I just rarely. I'm not saying I've never played a demo. I certainly have, but it's not something I seek out. And I thought this was an interesting not my thing because you, Mike, often play demos. And I know that you download almost every demo that comes out and give it a try.
Yes.
So I think that's interesting.
So the reasons why I download demos... I definitely play way more demos than I play games. I think that's safe to say. Now, the reason why is because, especially now, there are so many games out there, and A, because I like to try new things, and it's free. You know, that's, if they weren't free, yeah, I wouldn't play demos. And I'm usually not invested enough in the 20 games that come out this week to probably buy any of them. But I'm definitely invested for 5 minutes to try them out, and I find I usually get my fix of game X after 5 minutes, and then I'm done. I didn't have to pay any money. My investment's over. I had my experience. I can talk about it. You know, it's in my lore now, and then I'm done. I guess what I'm implying is that I'm more knowledgeable about games in general just because I do play them and you don't, maybe.
No, I think you're actually right, and all of that seems totally right, and intellectually, I'm like, that's you're right. Absolutely right. You're I should be right. playing more idiot. Demos. I may as well play more demos, but yet I know I'm just not going to. I don't know. I think I feel like, why should I, like, I know I can always just, like, turn on my Xbox and play Luminous and do that for as long as I would ever be playing a demo, and I know I'm going to have fun with that. Like, that's going to be sweet. Luminous fucking rules. Like, why wouldn't I just do that then play something that might be good or might be bad when I have... I guess I get... Maybe a lot of the demoing that you do, I fulfill by watching something like a quick look on Giant Bomb, and I kind of see what it's like and get the sense of whether I want to play it, but I don't actually download it. True. Which is... Yeah.
I think that's fine.
New experiences are healthy for you, even when they end up negative.
So, agreed. Yeah, that makes me think, like, I mean, do you feel that way about most of life? Like, it's not worth trying new things once, like, a restaurant, you won't really try a lot of things. You'll find the one thing you like and then never try another thing.
I do the total opposite. At restaurants, I try not to order the same thing that I always...
Why don't you like eating what you enjoy?
What's I don't know, man. You? I'm idiosyncratic. I'm a unique
this
individual.
This is almost exactly a discussion we've had before where you both attacked me, where I basically said...
Well, prepare to be attacked again. Put up a shield.
Seriously. Where I basically said that new and different is better than known good. Like, music,
mm-hmm. film, mm-hmm. food, mm-hmm. you know, staying with this known relatively good is, you know, boring. And when that is the status quo for an extended period of time, it becomes neutral. It's no longer good. It's neutral. And so you need to have new positive and negative experiences in order to experience anything valuable.
I think the difference, though, and just with game demos, not with all things, is that I will try 20 game demos, you know, between a minute. Sometimes, yeah, it literally takes me like 30 seconds. Like, I get past the title screen and to the first 30 seconds of gameplay, and I'm like, oh, crap, I don't want to play this game, and then I delete it. And I won't buy any of them. Even if I like some of them, I'll like a demo for that 5 minutes, and I'm like, this is awesome. I would play this. Never going to play it. Never going to buy it. And yet you do.
Yeah, well, I fall somewhere in between both of you on the whole demo issue. I mean, Charles basically is none. Mike basically is all. It's like all versus zero. And I'm in the middle where I think that demos often give you a false impression of what the game can actually is. Lots of times it's like this section of the game that they pulled out a month before or two.
They are engineered
before they
like,
finished the game. And so it has all these extra bugs.
As interesting as possible.
It doesn't have necessarily this introduction story that gets you into it. You know, it might be this weird, like late section of the game where you would have this all this knowledge and skill if you were there in the real game at that point, but you don't. So sometimes they're like crazy hard and weird. Or not just hard, but like, I don't understand why I'm doing this or what I'm doing, and here's these buttons, and okay, this sucks, right? I think I don't play a lot of demos because I can usually tell whether I'm going to like a game from press coverage or from just like the history of a developer or something. Like, for example, I knew I was going to like Journey, and I avoided all press coverage possible because I just was ready to buy that as soon as it came out and play it. And it was phenomenal because I liked Flowers. And I saw like one screenshot.
I like Flowers too. They're pretty. They smell good.
Flower, sorry.
You like Flow and Floater.
Yeah. And I saw like one screenshot of Journey and went, holy shit, instant buy. And then turned
off. I love
off.
Sand so much.
Yeah, turned off the media input on that.
Long but, scarves forever.
But other ones that it's like, well, I don't know exactly what I'm going to think about this without trying it. Like Kingdoms of Amalur, that seemed mm-hmm. like an actually a valuable demo to attempt. Mm-hmm. And it was actually a fairly good demo because it seemed like it was just the beginning of the game.
Yeah, it is. It is.
It,
yeah.
It plays the intro cut. So, but the downfall of that is that it was buggy in a way that the final gold wasn't. And they didn't let you continue your demo save if you bought the actual game, which is super weird. If they're going to put the beginning of the game in the demo, let you like put an instant buy button at the end of it and maybe release it on day one with the game so that you could just continue if you like it, you know?
You mean like shareware, essentially?
Yeah.
Like
that is a
old
compelling
Doom shareware.
I mean, yeah. They do that in the indie games and in the XBLA games, and it's super effective.
Agreed.
And I don't mean super effective. I just mean it works well.
But Mike, I think you have a problem with demos or something. Maybe that's a little harsh.
A problem?
You're addicted to demos.
Maybe it's a little harsh, but I yeah, maybe it's just a difference. It's not a problem. It's just that I think you may even agree that you've done is you've supplanted all this game playing with demo playing instead. And what you do is you play a demo, and even if you like it, instead of buying it, you're just like, oh yeah, I pretty much experienced that game and now I'm done.
Yeah.
And
but I mean
you've basically said that, which is funny.
That is what I said 5 minutes ago.
It's funny because that doesn't make any sense to me at all. Like if you like the game, buy it and keep playing it instead of trying 10 more demos that night that all suck of games that you probably could have predicted with a 90-something percent accuracy that you knew were going to suck.
So what I'll say to that is, and maybe you guys just don't agree with me, but I feel very overwhelmed by how many games there are. I feel very overwhelmed by how many books there are or movies there are that I haven't read or watched or experienced.
Yeah, it's like reading the first page of all these books that come out.
And you know what? That's great, because it's not like I only play demos and don't play full games. If that is all I did, yes, I would totally agree with you. But the thing is that I want to experience the breadth of gaming, which means there are a few games that I'll love to play. Like, I would never just play the demo for Fallout 3 or for Braid or for Bastion. Like, you know,
that's
an
interesting question. If you played a demo for Fallout 3, would you play that game? Because I don't know that you would.
Yeah, you might drop that
game. You might play that game. I know what this is. And see, go like, this is not, you play that demo and right, say, like, well, this is terrible.
And I think maybe you're painting a different picture of how I think about gaming than I want painted, because you're almost saying it like I play demos in a vacuum. I don't play demos in a vacuum. Like, I don't just play every demo because, oh, free stuff. You know, yeah, I do pick and choose a little bit. And I think, you know, I know a bit about the game before I download the demo. So it's, you know, it's a bit of both. Sure, like, sure. Oh, I heard about it. Oh, there's a demo. Cool. I want to try that out. And then sometimes I'm just like, you know, I just want to play a bunch of games, but I don't want to invest in any of them. So I'm going to play a bunch of demos. And I'm like, okay, that was cool. That was a cool idea. And then I'm done. And then I'll go back to playing Mass Effect 3, which I knew was good, which I knew you guys were going to play, which I knew I was going to enjoy. And yeah, there's a demo for Mass Effect 3. And no, I'm not just going to play a demo for that and say I'm done, because I knew that game was going to be sweet. So I went the extra mile and bought and played it. So yeah.
I kind of feel like if, I guess what I feel is if you, if I download the demo and I like it, then it could, you know, it's sort of, if you download the demo and I hate it, then I'm like, fuck it, I wasted some time. And I wasted some hard drive time, space, delete, right? So that sucks. And if I download it and I really like it, then it has the potential to actually spoil something for me or make me say, oh, I do like this, but not enough to have played it. Like, not enough to actually go buy it and play the whole thing. You know, it's some like weird middle. Or I downloaded it, I really liked it, but now I wish I hadn't and I could have experienced the game, you know, completely fresh. Josh thinks I'm crazy. Josh is giving me the Reddit squinty eyes.
Well, you're
the look of disapproval.
Like, you're basically like saying that if in this hypothetical where you played this demo and it was good,
it's like heroin. If you try heroin and it's a terrible experience, then you just had a terrible, like a bad trip. And then if you really love it, then that's almost worse, right? Because then you're going to be addicted to heroin.
No,
total relevance.
It's amazing how accurate that is about gaming.
No, if you tried a demo that you didn't otherwise know about the game or wouldn't have tried the game, bought the game, you weren't sure if you were going to buy the game, mm-hmm. and then you liked it and you were like, okay, now I'm going to play this.
Yeah.
It's something that you discovered because of the demo,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and therefore the demo had a positive
added value
effect.
But it also could have spoiled part of the game for me.
Yeah, but is a good game that you enjoy with a small portion of it spoiled better than not having ever experienced that game or known that you would have liked that game because mm-hmm. of the press coverage misrepresented it or something?
It is.
I think what actually happens is that I play a lot of demos and I rarely go from demo to purchase.
Yeah, like, you never do that.
Right, but So I think really I have two avenues. I have the games that I know that I want to play, and I probably never play a demo or trial of them. I just buy them and play them and like them. And then everything else, if there's a demo, I'll play it, enjoy the 5 minutes of it, and then move on, and I get my lore chunk, and then I'm done. And I don't need to play it for 20 hours. I might enjoy it. I'm not saying that I wouldn't enjoy it, but I just don't feel the need, the urge, the ambition, the desire to do it, and I move on. Because there are so many fucking games that I don't feel like I'm missing out. Much like with books. If I just say, I'm not going to read that wing of the library, well, that's okay. I've got the other wing of the library that I'm never going to read all the books before I die anyway. So I don't. The opportunity cost is lost on me. I don't really see it.
I think a lot of these games that you try are comparable to like Mass Effect multiplayer, which is this thing that's very good and enjoyable, but doesn't have an end game. It could continue to be good and enjoyable indefinitely. And you might have never tried, or you might have tried once and put back down if we weren't all encouraging you to play, you know, or me specifically encouraging you to play with me.
Right.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
So, yeah, keep not using demos. Right. We don't really give a shit one way or the other. Okay, so I believe we're going to do one more section, and then this is going to wrap up the podcast. We're going to do best game ever, where one of us basically chooses a game that we think is the best game ever, hyperbole, even though we're going to do this multiple times, so we're invalidating the concept. Right, one of the best game
best games ever.
In parentheses ever. So I'm going to start this one off, and we've already mentioned it before. I'm going to say Right. Well,
it has been mentioned on the show.
Yeah. So Fallout 3 is definitely one of the best games ever. You know, I kind of would say / New Vegas because, like, they're so similar, but, and one kind of improves the other.
No slashes.
You lost me.
Okay. So Fallout 3 is the best game ever because let's go with Roman numerals. Okay, builds on an already existing franchise. It builds on an existing franchise that has already been proven and has tons of fans. And without destroying that pre-existing framework for just something totally new, uses it but takes it from the overhead isometric top-down and overhead are the same thing, Fallout 1 and 2 into the modern-day, you know, third-person / first-person adventure shooter genre, which initially lots of people were up in arms over, if we want to talk about things that had outcries, because they're like, you know, it's going to be Oblivion with guns.
That was a huge outcry, yes.
It's going to be Oblivion with guns, because Oblivion had already come out. Everybody got their, like, big open-world sandbox fix with swords and horses and Patrick Stewart.
Dempsey?
With McSteamy. So they're like, oh crap, you know, it's using the same Embryo engine or Gamebryo engine, and it's just going to be Oblivion with guns, and that's going to suck because we want our isometric top-down strategy game. We don't want Oblivion with guns. But it ended up selling incredibly well, and it ended up being really fun. I think I probably enjoyed it more than a lot of people because I didn't play Oblivion. I didn't get my big open world sandbox fantasy do whatever you want fix, whereas I got it in Fallout 3. It was my Oblivion, so I think that's probably why I played it through a couple times, or at least once all the way through, and then a couple, you know, 20 hour versions of other characters. I already loved the post-apocalyptic idea of that's plausible if you actually read the history they write, you know, where we essentially end up nuking ourselves and China, like, tries to take over Alaska to get their oil reserves. And, you know, there are people that live through it because of these underground vaults that the government basically builds, except there's kind of a twist in that a lot of the vaults they built were built for specific reasons, and they, like, seeded them interestingly. Like, let's put 999 guys and one woman in this one, or let's put this one where, you know, the PA system slowly gets quieter and quieter over the years, or, you know, like basically little brain experiments that Penny Arcade did a great little comic strip series about it when it came out. The reason why I like it so much in general is because for the exact opposite of why I like a Mass Effect game, which is that it's not a novel. It's not a story that has necessarily...
I want the listeners to know that Josh is scribbling furiously at the moment.
Looking for ways to tear me down and how Fallout 3 is a piece of shit. It's not necessarily this crazy, intergalactic space opera. You know, it's more down to earth. It's more...
plausible.
It's more plausible, yeah, in that, you know, I could be this guy. And that's a main difference. You're not playing a character. You're playing an avatar. You know, you don't have a name except the name you give it. You know, your story is one more of, here is a situation. What do you do in that situation? And yes, there are quests, just like in Mass Effect, that you follow and you get experience and you get story and you understand the people that are there and you get to know them. The details of an RPG world are there that get you sucked into it and make you identify with certain people. The combat is different. It feels more RPG-ish, especially compared to the later Mass Effects, in that you can pause the action even more than you can in Mass Effect. Yes, I know you have the RB where you can, like, give your people, you know, instructions on what to do, and then you release it and they do that. So I guess, I mean, that is similar in the way that you attack an enemy, and you can attack a specific section of them with a specific weapon. And, you know, you have action points that say how much you can do in a certain amount of time, and you have to wait for that to come back before you can shoot again, much like a biotic power that has, like, a cooldown time. So, yeah, I mean, the combat is not amazingly different, so that's not necessarily why I like it, but I do like how Fallout does it, and how it has the VAT system that is sort of like... You know, it kind of harkens back to like a Baldur's Gate kind of game where you literally pause the game and you think, okay, what am I going to do and what am I going to use? And then you unpause and you kind of let that happen. It's a little more hands-off. It's a little more strategic, a little less action-y, although you can play it action-y, and that's the thing. You can never use VATS and you can just attack people like an FPS.
It's pretty bad if you do that. If you just play it as a shooter, it's not a great experience.
It's not meant to do, and that's... That has a lot to do with, because it's more stats-based, especially in the accuracy, when you shoot someone, it's not just a range of your weapon or your power, it is like whether you will hit them or not. Yeah. Even if you're using iron sights and you have your reticle right on their head,
you can still miss.
You still might miss if your gun ability is too low, or your weapon is half broken, or your arm is like, you know, has been injured or something. So I kind of like that aspect of it. But I think the main reason why I like it more than a Mass Effect, even though I love Mass Effect and it's great, and it's hard to say that Fallout is better. Like,
it is hard to say that.
It's that
is not true.
But what I would say is that I would replay Fallout before I'd replay Mass Effect, and I think
That's interesting, because I would do that. That's true too, but for a different reason.
But I think the reason is because I see Mass Effect as a novel, right, and I see Fallout as a playground.
Uh-huh.
And so it kind of affords the replay more, because it really is like, okay, this time I'm going to play this dude and he's going to have these attributes and I'm going to make these decisions, and I could end up in a different place and I could just never do the main story. But I think in a game like Mass Effect, you never really think about, like, no, I'm not going to attack the Reapers. I'm just going to hang out on the Citadel, and that's going to be my playthrough, and then I'm going to stop, and I'm going to be satisfied with that. Whereas I feel like in Fallout, you could do something like that, because...
Yeah, you certainly could.
It feels more like a, let's just play around with this environment, and yeah, I could go down the main quest line and find my father and, you know, repair the water treatment system and... attack the Enclave with the crazy, awesome robot character that you repair and use in the final battle. And that's all awesome. And that's cool. I enjoyed that storyline. But I also just enjoyed being in the world and just sitting there, much like you'd enjoy sitting and looking at the galaxy map in Mass Effect, or maybe just walking around one of the planets, you know. But that's the thing with, like, Mass Effect 3... or any really in the Mass Effects, the only real safe place is on your ship or on the Citadel. There might have been some places in the earlier Mass Effects where you could do that, but I don't really remember them. Mainly, you go on a mission, and there are people who are hostile to you, and yes, you have to attack them. And you can't just chill and hang out and do whatever you want. You have to go down the tunnel and kill things and beat the mission. Whereas Fallout doesn't really have missions. It has quests. It has, you know, okay, I've got a quest line, I've got a quest log. Yes, they both have quest logs, but, you know, it's not just go to planet and kill guys until the mission is over. You know, it is go to this town and I could walk there, or I could fast travel there, or I could not do that and do these other 10 things. And, you know, just like with Skyrim and Oblivion, you know, I feel like there's a little more element of choice, which I don't know whether that's good or bad, but I enjoy it. But I enjoy the environment. The post-apocalyptic idea, I really like it. Maybe I'm just not as into the space opera, and that's why I like it more. But, yeah, there's lots of bugs, but you get used to them, and it's an open-world game. Like, I think that's going to happen, and you kind of have to accept that at some level. So I could talk more, but we're going long. So you guys have any thoughts about these? I'm sure Josh doesn't have much to say, so Charles, what do you want to say about that?
I think Fallout 3 is an excellent game. I think Fallout New Vegas is a pretty good game, but I didn't play it as much as Fallout 3. I played 100 hours of Fallout 3. I really like it. I really liked it for the reasons that you... a lot of the reasons that you state. The open world sandboxy stuff. I mean, nobody does those games better than Bethesda. I think it's not as good a game as Mass Effect in any way, particularly 2 and 3. I think that what they did with the storytelling in 2 and 3 is, of Mass Effect is so amazing, so epic, that it can't, like, just go do shit is cool, it's fun, and it makes for a really engaging gameplay experience, but it's not the same, doesn't carry the same weight for me in terms of authorship as Mass Effect does. But that game's excellent. I really like it. Honest to God, I really love Fallout 3. It's a good game. And they actually did really good things with DLC. I think they kind of were the model for how to really support a game with DLC. I mean, they released excellent, very full-featured DLC, like, I don't know, a year maybe after that game first came out.
They were kind of pumping it out. Like, each game has, like, I think four or major, five like very major significant DLCs, yeah.
DLC and stuff that extends the story. One of the pieces of DLC allowed you to continue playing after the end of the game, and so they've done some really good stuff with that. Josh,
do it. Let me preface this by saying I enjoyed Mass Effect, or I enjoyed Fallout 3.
Tipped your hat.
I played Fallout 3 for more than 50 hours, some high number. I didn't beat the primary story. I got to Rivet City.
That doesn't really mean anything because you could get to Rivet City in an hour if you really wanted to.
Well, I played more than 50 hours and I got to Rivet City near the end of the 50 hours.
Okay.
I did not continue the main questline past that point. But I did enjoy my time in it quite a bit, the roaming and the finding, basically the exploration. To me, Fallout basically feels like a toy or a sandbox or something. It's one of those things that you could just be in and experience for as long as you want to. Like I am currently enjoying the Mass Effect 3 multiplayer, you know, intensely for many, many hours. So the gist is you like the world more than me. And so you wanted to spend more time in that world doing whatever, messing around, exploring more, trying new classes or whatever. And I got my fill, you know, in that amount of time and without having completed the main campaign. Yeah, I don't need to harp on like all the negative aspects that I think exists in Mass Effect 3 or in Fallout 3. but yeah, I do think it's flawed in a number of ways. But really my primary complaint besides the bugs or the lack of you know, I didn't think the main campaign was the storyline was that good. I wasn't compelled to continue that at all. You know, but and I wanted a better story, but I know that's not the strength of that game. The gist is I didn't like the world that much. It was, you know, I don't like being in this post-apocalyptic really green thing, and that's not the game maker's fault or anybody's fault. It's just that's not my preferred environment. I like a medieval environment better or a sci-fi environment better. So that's less of a problem with the game. So I don't have a problem with you nominating it for a best game ever because I did enjoy it quite a bit. And to me, I felt like Skyrim was kind of my Fallout 3 or Oblivion, but probably Skyrim more because I think it's very, very similar in structure and such. And I ended up playing Skyrim a lot more just because I liked the world more. But it had essentially some of the same flaws, which are not necessarily flaws in the game as much as flaws of my experience, my mental state while playing a game like that or something. You know, the
you can't help yourself but min-max.
Yeah, the super open world games. Like, I can't help but just waste an absurd amount of time looking through every cabinet for anything that, you know, individual bottle caps, you know, or in Skyrim, all these little gold pieces everywhere, you know, like cheese wheels or whatever item, you know, is the best
value to weight ratio, you know. Mm-hmm. I was only picking up stuff that was at least a 10 to 1 weight ratio in Skyrim until I just got too overburdened, and then I upped my pickup weight ratio to 20
doing
to 1
it wrong.
Or 30 to 1. And I was just, yeah, I play those games wrong. So it's really more of like a problem with me, not a problem with those games. I enjoy them for a while, but then I end up hating them at the end of my time with them to an extent greater
hating
than
yourself. It's a self.
Oh yeah, it is. Self-hate. It's like self-loathing. It's like, you know, if I got addicted to Farmville or something, and, right. I, and then I added
Cow-clicker.
Up, added up, you know, Cow-clicker, you know, I added up the time, and I went, Jesus Christ, I spent 100 hours playing Cow-clicker, which I did to Skyrim. I played 100 hours playing Skyrim, at least more than that. You know, at that point, I hate myself or something.
So
to the point that I should not have. I regret doing that to an extent, but it was fun enough for me to do that in the first place. So they are successful games.
So how are we going to do this? We didn't plan this out before the podcast, so you get listeners a little, again, optimistically, listeners, more than one.
I think we can say whether or not we approve for the game to be added to the list.
Okay.
Is that what we're doing?
Mike, clearly you approve because you say that.
Not really. No, yeah, of course I do.
Josh, do you approve? You're the swing vote.
I do approve.
Yeah. Well done.
Yeah.
Good choice. I approve as well. Fallout 3 is inducted hereby into the Escort Mission list of games, best awesome games that have happened. What is it called?
It's the best game ever.
Basically, if you play this game, like, you're going to like it. Like, don't even act like you don't like it, because that's bullshit. Okay, well, I think this was a pretty successful podcast here, you know, talking about Mass Effect and iPhone games and whatever the fuck else we talked about. I don't know what's going on here.
To be clear, we're not only going to focus on games. We're going to discuss other things in coming episodes.
Yeah, we couldn't
up and coming.
Get, like,
they're coming.
Enough Mass Effect out of our systems.
Yeah.
We had to
do it. So,
yeah. But we have a lot of other stuff on the table.
Right. All right. So I think that wraps it up for these guys. Thank you, Josh. Thank you, Charles. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
That I just talked to myself in third person. That about does it for this episode of the Escort Mission.
You've been escorted.
Yeah, get the hell out of here. Late.